You're listening to Voices of Your Village, and today I get to bring you a much requested episode. We get to dive into what this work looks like with teens, and especially talking about teen anxiety. I got to hang out with one of my favorite humans, Casey O'Rourke. She hosts the Joyful Courage podcast, and her work really focuses on positive discipline in those adolescent years and all the things that come up in that space. And she truly is a human that I'm like, I'm gonna need you on speed dial, my friend. I just find her approach to this so in alignment with ours with young humans, and that it really does come back to relationship and connection above all else. And when I look forward to those teen years and look ahead, what I really want is to be in relationship with my teenagers. And Casey does such a beautiful job of laying out, what does this look like? What's the messiness of it all? And how do we navigate it? So I'm so jazzed to get to bring this episode to you. All right, folks, let's dive in. Hey there, I'm Alyssa Blass Campbell. I'm a mom with a master's degree in early childhood education and co-creator of the Collaborative Emotion Processing Method. I'm here to walk alongside you through the messy, vulnerable parts of being humans raising other humans with deep thoughts and actionable tips. Let's dive in together. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Voices of Your Village. Today, I get to hang out with an old pal that I'm so jazzed to be back hanging out with. I get to hang out with Casey O'Rourke. She has a master's in education and is a facilitator of personal growth and development. For the last 15 years, her work has encouraged parents to discover the purpose of their journey and provided them with tools and a shift of mindset that has allowed them to deepen their relationship with themselves and their families. Casey is a positive discipline lead trainer and coach. She hosts the incredible Joyful Courage podcast, parenting summits, live and online classes, and individual coaching. Her book, Joyful Courage, Calming the Drama and Taking Control of Your Parenting Journey, was published in May 2019. Casey lives in the Pacific Northwest with her husband and two teenagers. Casey, it's so nice to be back with you.
I am just so happy to be in conversation with you, Alyssa. Thanks for having me. And thanks to all the listeners for being here.
Totally. We've been getting a lot of requests for like, this is awesome. What does this look like with older kids? This is great. What does it look like with teens? And we just immediately on our team, we're like, well, we know who we need to talk to first. Obviously needed to get on with you. And I love it because you're like, honestly, you're one of the only resources I send people to when they're like, I love this. How do we translate it into teenagers? Because I think you and I speak the same language. I think it's what drew us to each other in the first place years ago when I got to come hang out on your pod. Mm-hmm. And I so deeply appreciate the way that you share this work from a realistic standpoint of like understanding it intellectually versus like doing it in practice can be two totally different ballgames.
Yeah, 100%. And as I came into the teen years with my oldest, I also was in the question of, what the hell does this look like with a teenager? Especially one who was getting into mischief, like straight out of the gate. I was like, ah, like I thought that if you started off, you know, in this relationship-centered approach and, you know, that you were somehow going to get to avoid the hard teen years. And what I found was like, there's no getting around teen brain development, you know, and it happens, individuation happens, all the things happen. And what I've learned through my experience and my work is how we respond to it makes a giant difference in the unfolding. The unfolding is there and it is deeply messy. So anyone who's listening with teens and tweens who are like, clearly I'm doing something wrong because this is hard and messy. The messy and the hard does not necessarily indicate that you're doing something wrong, right? It really is just the nature of the terrain during this time. So I'm stoked to be here to talk more about that.
Yeah, same. And I'm so grateful for you mentioning that. I've had a mantra that I've turned to since pregnancy, since I like really the beginning of parenthood for me. And it's literally been through pregnancy. I used it in labor. I've used it in the newborn stage. I've used it when Sage refused to bottle his entire life and I was a working parent, through carrying him sobbing through a recent hike. And when I wouldn't let him stand on a ledge hundreds of feet in the air and reach out and touch a waterfall by himself without me holding on to him.
How dare
and
you?
you know, what a terrible parent. And it's the only way out of this is through it, right? That like, and when you were just sharing that of like the messy and the hard, and that maybe we could avoid that messy and hard if I did certain things. And for me, it's been like the only way out of this is through it has carried me through the hard of like, I don't have to problem solve my way out. I can't to-do list my way out of this. I can't even always connect my way out of this. Sometimes
Oh,
we're
that
just
gave me
going to
the
get through
chills.
it.
Oh, that gave me the chills. And I think what happens with when they become adolescents, that instinct to fix.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and that discomfort around our kids' strong emotions like disappointment and sadness and anger. I mean, being in it right now, like it feels like it's amplified, but really, as I listen to you talk, I'm remembering the early years was amplified as well, right? It's just a different, it's just a different age and stage. And the main thing for me has been trusting and remembering that their only way through it is through it.
Yeah.
Right. And really allowing, which, you know, you said in my bio, facilitator of personal growth and development, parenting is a personal growth and development workshop that you may not have recognized that you signed up for, but that is exactly how I hold it. It has been for me. It is for the clients that I work with. It's just such this intense opportunity to be with your own inner turmoil as you watch your, you know, young person struggle with friendships and school and mental health, if that's something that shows up, substance use, if that's something that shows up. And it is all about our own inner landscape. How am I going to show up to this in a way that's going to be helpful and not hurtful? How can I show up right now? And our teenagers do not want us to act like we can fix things, right? And that
I don't think anyone does.
Right.
I don't think our toddlers
really
do.
Hard lesson. Yeah.
It sucks. I hate when somebody comes in to fix my things.
Yeah.
I know I just need to talk about it.
Yeah.
I just need to tell you how much this sucks.
Yeah.
I don't need you to fix it.
Yeah.
But we're very good at fixing. And I think for me, as I even just like look ahead to teenage years, I experienced trauma as a 14-year-old that then like shaped and really was a huge part of my teen years. And I was chatting with a friend yesterday whose son is 16 and just went through his first like heartbreak. And yeah. And she was like, just watching him be in this, she was like, he asked me to sleep in bed with him for the first time since he was a toddler. And she's like, I soaked it up and he fell asleep. And I was just like crying in bed next to him. Like, I don't want him to have to go through this. I don't want him to feel this because I know exactly what this feels like.
Yeah. And
and
it
I
is,
hate
it is our work to be there and to remember that could have been my story like 4 months ago.
Yeah.
And I had to like actively remind myself, well, this is day one. Day two is going to feel better. Day three is going to feel better. Like he's not going to sit in this sadness forever. And he gets to have this experience because we all need to know heartbreak so that down the line, the next time something happens, I call it having those experiences in the back pocket. He gets to remember like, oh yeah, I've hurt like this before and it didn't last forever.
Yeah.
Right. So that's the other thing when I talk about parenting teenagers and being with them and their experiences is the more experiences that they can accrue and we can stay out of the way,
Yeah.
And really let them, like, we've had a couple things show up where in the, you know, there's been some morning afters over here.
Sure.
And I said, let's just really like just sit and feel right now. Cause there are micro decisions that we make all the time that lead us one way or the other. And right now you're having this rich experience around one outcome.
Yeah.
So, you know, regret, remorse, like that's a really important thing to feel and to know. And we had a follow-up conversation that sounded like, so what did you learn the other night? Oh yeah, I can't do, you know, doing this leads to bad decisions. Okay, great. So what's your plan for tonight? Well, I'll probably do this other thing, which I won't give you the details. It was kind of hilarious, but I was like, okay, sounds like a plan, you know, make sure you come in and give me a kiss when you get home tonight. But I think it's so important instead of, which is hard because novelty seeking is one of the things that the brain is wired for during the teen years, which means our kids are going to explore and push boundaries. And when we get so afraid and angry about that and think that we can control that, we're really robbing them of the experience of learning through the choices that they're making, because instead they're sitting inside of, oh my God, my mom, she's so over the top, or she's such a bitch, or my dad doesn't get it. Instead of, oh yeah, I do feel not so great this morning about some of the choices I made. Where were those points where I could have done something differently? That is a lot more valuable for them in the long term than how dare you? You don't get to go out this weekend. Think about what you've done, right? Like all they're thinking is, how can I get out of this?
Totally. Well, it pulls away from the like actual connection and collaboration.
Yeah.
And it's control at every age. Right? Like we're always looking at like, and we just have this false sense of, or maybe it's real. I can control more right now when Sage is two than you can control with a teenager or a 20-year-old. Right. And that control is slowly just pulling away, and I can either grasp at it and try to assert it for years to come and lose that connection, I think, with him. Or I can learn how to be in relationship where control isn't my focus.
Yeah.
And I think it's so hard. I and having experienced the teen years I experienced, I very much had the parenting approach, or I experienced the parenting approach of, oh, you did this, like they found cigarettes in my pack and just like showed me they found them and then threw them out. And I'm like, cool, can get them again. You know, like,
yeah,
I like was grounded for this thing or that or whatever. And it didn't change my behavior. My behavior just became secretive.
Yes.
And also then when big things did happen, I didn't have a place to turn.
Yes. Same.
You know?
And yeah. Even into college,
exactly.
Like really unhealthy behaviors. And no healthy adult to say, well, Nick, tell me about how this is working out for you, right? My peer group were engaging in the same kind of stuff-ish.
Sure.
Right? And that's something that is so important to me with both of my kids. So my youngest is a senior this year in high school. And I've been really clear with him, like, you know, my plan this year is to really give you some training ground around making your own choices and giving you space and freedom to decide what is best for you. Because in a year, you're going to be multiple states away and nobody's going to be really paying that kind of attention to you. Nobody's going to be holding that space for you. So let's use this year in a way where you can kind of stretch out more than you ever have. And, you know, when it's an overstretch, we get to tease it apart and look at it and process it. And by the way, everyone, I get worried that I'm permissive and my kids are like, you're like the strictest parent of all the parents. And I say, how do you figure? Like, what do you really? Oh, yeah. Things go down and we got to process. we got to talk about it. You know, it'd be easier if you were like, Matt, give me your phone, give me your car keys. But instead, it's like, let's sit with this, you know, and I got to tell you, it's
You're
nice
gonna
to hear
that.
You're
going to make me do the
work around it. Yeah. Sorry.
The heck, Mom. One thing that you've shared so openly about, that's something that I struggled with for a long time, and mine was largely as a trauma response, but that was all consuming and really scary and detrimental for years, like a decade for me, was living with anxiety. Mm-hmm. And it's something that I personally have fear around my kids eventually as teens living with anxiety, because it's one of those for me where I'm like, God, it was so hard and it was so scary and it was so consuming. And so if you could just walk me through this real quick, Casey, on, can you just give future Alyssa some pep talks here that mm-hmm. are going to come in handy for when they inevitably experience fear that spirals into anxiety, right? Where they are stuck in that fear. You've shared so openly about it, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, first I want to say that whatever the trauma was that came up for you when you were 14, I'm really sorry about that. And
thanks.
Wasn't your fault. And life is a fucking weird place, right?
Thank you. Yeah.
Second, I am not an anxiety expert. However, I did navigate some pretty intense anxiety with my oldest, who's now 20 years old, living on her own, has a job, is in college, like super amazing, inspiring human being. So I think my advice to future, you know, Mama Alyssa is mm-hmm. just remembering that your experience of having moved through anxiety is a goldmine for you. You get to really relate to your kids. I have never really experienced anxiety, and that was, it made it really hard for me to relate and show up, for Rowan in the way that she needed. We moved through it, but you know, remember that your experience is a really powerful experience to use and to resource, while also remembering your experience is not going to be your kiddo's experience.
Yeah, that's the hard part, right? It's that lack of projection.
Yes.
Right? Not projecting what I experienced as theirs.
Well, hey there, busy mama. Are you looking for ways to make your life easier, your home less chaotic, and at the same time, add more joy to your life? My name is Deanna Yates, and I'm the host of Wanna Be Clutter-Free, a podcast all about letting go of the stuff we don't need in our lives so that we can focus on what truly matters. Don't worry, I'm not going to tell you to throw it all away or make you feel guilty about keeping something you love, no matter how many other people don't quite understand it. But I will give you practical and, more importantly, actionable advice so that you can make progress right away. And you won't just hear it from me. There are amazing guests too. It's like having your bestie in your pocket, telling you it's okay to let go of the things that are not serving you and your family in a totally non-judgmental way. So join me over on the podcast where we can work on progress over perfection for those of us that want to be clutter-free.
Hey there, I'm Debbie Reber, the founder of Tilt Parenting and the author of the book Differently Wired. The mission of Tilt is to change the way neurodivergence, whether that's having a learning disability, having ADHD, being gifted, autistic, or some combination of all of the above, is perceived and experienced so differently wired kids and the parents like us raising them can truly thrive. On the Tilt Parenting podcast, I get to talk with authors, therapists, educators, and parenting experts who are committed to this mission. I ask the questions my listeners are most curious about when it comes to supporting our kids. And in turn, my guests share strategies for challenges, out-of-the-box ideas for navigating school, best practices for therapies, tips for advocating, and so many thoughtful insights on what it really takes to help our kids grow up feeling seen and respected so they can create awesome lives for themselves. I know that raising a differently wired kid can feel overwhelming and isolating, but I promise you, you are not alone, and it can feel so much better. If you're on this parenting journey, come listen to Tilt Parenting. Together, we can shift this paradigm and show up for our exceptional kids with hope, possibility, and joy.
Right. And I think that there, you know, and I'm sure you've done so much work around this, you know, noticing when their fear is poking at your fear and noticing when your emotional response to your kids is actually your emotional response to your past trauma.
Yeah. It's a right? doozy. That work is a doozy.
Yeah. It's not like, it'll be fine. Just do that. You know, I mean,
yeah.
We can't even really, I mean, it's so layered, right? And I think, you know, that's something that my daughter is learning right now. She, we did dialectic behavioral therapy together when she was 17, had dropped out of high school.
Sure.
Danced with an eating disorder. And she lets me share about all of this. Anxiety trapped her in her room, basically. Yeah. And for a long time with her bong, right?
Yeah.
So that was the self-medication was weed smoking. I don't know how she got the weed considering she never left her room, but.
Because I met you when you were in the thick of this.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Right. So, you know, talk about showing up, you know, I have my own history of substance use and mischief making. Being on the other side is just craziness. Anyway, we went DBT. She finally was agreeable to therapy and has had the most amazing therapist. She graduated from therapy and has been out in the world and in relationship with people and dating and friendships and is noticing her gaps, right? Because anxiety took about 18 months from her. Plus COVID, right?
Sure.
Where the social learning and practicing social engagement and personal interpersonal relationship wasn't available. And so just this summer she goes, God, you know, I think I need to go back to therapy. And
I said, love her.
Yes. I was like, yeah, exactly. This is how therapy works. You go, you work your shit out, you live, you realize, oh, I found another gap. I've peeled back another layer. And so you get to go back and work that out. And so, you know, I think that's the thing too, future Alyssa, is noticing when what's happening with your kids is actually resurfacing or, you know, kind of showing you where your gaps still remain in your own healing so that you aren't, you know, working it out on them or having unrealistic expectations of them. The hardest thing about anxiety for me was not taking it personally because when Rowan gets anxious, she's deeply uncomfortable and kind of is a bitch. Like she's so uncomfortable that I am like a walking trigger for her and just, you know, the looks and the snark and and it took me a long time to recognize this is her tell that she's in anxiety.
Yeah.
Because I would be like, why are you acting like this? What have I done? You know, like specifically on her 16th birthday, this happened. We were all out to dinner. We had some of her friends, a bunch of my friends. We were at this restaurant. We sat down. I'd organized the whole thing. We sat down and she was just being so like side rude to me, barely would look at me. And I was just like, what is going on? Why is she being so like this? And I said, and then she leaned over and she goes, the wait staff isn't going to sing happy birthday to me, are they? And immediately I knew, okay. And I said, I will make sure that they don't. And I sent her auntie off to the hostess and said, listen, no birthday singing at our table. And then it was fine.
Yeah.
So, you know, learning where, again, I guess that's another little trigger, right? When am I taking it personally? And you know, also just being really curious about their experiences. Like, tell me about how it feels, right? Tell me about how you're coping. Tell me how you want me to respond if I'm around. Tell me what you need. And sometimes they're like, I don't know what I need. Okay.
Yeah, I need you to go away.
Yeah, I need you to go away. And I think also, and this is like a general thing that keeps coming up for me, like landing the message that you believe that they are capable is so huge, right? They're capable of moving through a panic attack. They're capable of being with their fear and worry. They're capable of pulling things off in the end. They're capable of asking for help. You know, you believe in their strengths, in their growing strengths, and you can name them and they know you believe in them. Because teen years, I'll tell you what, in my experience, there's so many moments where they don't believe in themselves and they need you to authentically be there and say, but wait a minute, this already happened once and I saw you do this, this, and this. And you pulled it off. You moved through it, right? So reminding them of their past success, reminding them when they've had experiences. And I think that was the hardest thing for Rowan was, and for young teens who are struggling with anxiety or depression, those are the two things that we navigated, is they don't have the past experience to remember and say, oh yeah, this happened before and it got better. Right? The first time, the first move through it, it's like, this is never going to get better. Rowan, there is no cure, mom. Right? And okay.
Cool. So, well, and then for you as the adult being like, oh, is this just what life is now? Right? And like, I can already, like, even just with toddler times where he's dysregulated or in a funk or there's stuff going on, we have transitions, whatever, and there's a new him where he's living in an 8 out of 10, easily set off, hard to come down from, whatever, and I'm just like, oh, is this our life now? Like, I'm not having a good time. When I was like carrying him sobbing out of that hike just this weekend, he literally at one point said, I'm not having fun. And I was like, me neither, but like, no one's having fun right now, right? And like, but when we're in those spaces where it's hard and it's a season of hard and it's not just a moment of hard, I can very easily be like, is this our new life? Is this who this kid is? Do I like being around this human? Mm-hmm. You know? And then when we move through it and we're on the other side, I'm like, oh no, that was just a hard season. This isn't it. And now that I've had enough or a few, enough, it feels like enough hard seasons where I'm like, okay, it ebbs, it flows. He's in a dysregulated state or a funk. He is a giant introvert. So if we go on vacation, I have four brothers. There's a bunch of people. Anytime we're going to be in a larger function, it pulls from his nervous system. And sometimes for a couple of weeks after we're back. And the first few times it happened starting as an infant, where we'd get home and we're like, oh my God, who is this? Who is this baby? Who is this human? And now we're a few years into it. And we're like, yep, this is the pattern. We're going to do something like this. This is what's going to happen. And now I can like see the forest through the trees sort of thing. But what you were talking about there with the like really trusting them to move through it. When we were creating the SEP method, we, as a part of it, created the 5 phases of emotion processing, and phase 3 is security in your feelings. And this is where, you know, I can move through this. I am secure to feel this because it won't feel this way forever, that this is temporary. And there was cool research out of Yale that came out in 2019, and it looked at different approaches to anxiety in kids. And it looked at medication, it looked at therapy, and it looked at parent or caregiver support of helping parents or caregivers allow their kids to experience it and know how to like be a partner in it without rescuing them from it. And that overwhelmingly had the greatest long-term results, right? And that's what you just hit on here, is that like, when we tell them, like, I trust you to navigate this. And when we like genuinely do, we say like, yeah, you're going to get through this. That for them, it builds this confidence of like, okay, this isn't going to consume me, which then really allows them to experience it without trying to rush it away or make it go away or feel like they're failing for experiencing it or for feeling it. Yeah. And when we look at like from the emotion side, it's like quicksand. When you try to make something go away emotionally, you just dig deeper into it. This is where we can like spiral and get stuck. And I think that little like tidbit, I was like, oh, I don't want to gloss over that because I think it's so important that we trust them to move through it means really also allowing them to be in it.
Yeah. And trusting ourselves, right? Trusting that we can be with it. One of the things, so my daughter was on my podcast last week. Right. She was my guest. It was her second update. So she's been on 3 times. And one of the things that she said was, and she was talking in reference to depression, because now at 20, when I ask her about anxiety, it is a non-issue for her.
Yeah. It's That's a like non-issue. Me at this point. I don't live with
yeah.
it.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes her body will respond to situations, totally. But as far as that being caged, yep. it's not an issue. Depression is something that, you know, comes and goes. And she talks about, you know, the more our expectations of how they move through it, it already feels impossible to them.
Yeah.
And then add on our needs, our emotional needs, like I need you to calm down. I need you yeah. to do your work, right? It's just added weight to an already impossible load that they're mm-hmm. carrying. So really doing our own work around how to be with them. And I will tell you too, my relationship with her could not be better. It is amazing how tight we are. And I attribute a lot of that to the fact that I didn't make things worse
sure.
when she was really going through her stuff. And what you said, like thinking about, is this forever now? Like, I mean, I definitely, last time we talked was like, will she ever move out? Will she ever be able to take care of herself? I don't know. Right. At this point, I'm terrified because now she's dropped out of 11th grade, yeah. can't leave the house, you know, is misusing weed. I don't know. I don't see the future, right? Yeah. And so for me, it was a lot of work around being okay with that uncertainty and trusting the power of loving her and maintaining connection with her and continuing to offer resources, not in a desperate or obnoxious way, but just, hey, and then eventually being like, okay, I got you into this program. We're going to do this together. And being in my firmness around this mm-hmm. is happening because life doesn't have to be this hard.
Yeah.
So we're going to figure this out together.
Did you feel at all, you know, having like, you've been in this work for a while and you so much of like, I'm laying these foundations, I'm whatever, whatever. Did you have glimpses into like, oh, and that was all still worth it, right? Like there was a foundation for her to pull from or to lean on, even if it was like the foundation of connection for you guys to maintain or get back to, et cetera. Did any of that come up, or were you just like, oh man, I spent a lot of intention in those early years and it was all for naught?
Oh, I totally was like, have I been duped into thinking that positive discipline was useful? I definitely was in that question. I mean, I think I wouldn't be human. We're not human if we're not mm-hmm. like, what have I done? How have I created this? Like, I can name a million things that I think influenced, you know, Rowan would be like, quit making it about you, Mom. But I mean, but there are definitely places where I didn't see her behavior as anxiety in early years or even school age, but there were a million signs. Mm. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, had I been more aware, I don't know if that's the right word, but if I had been looking for that, if there weren't things that I could have been doing slightly differently, maybe I did it more accommodating than I could, than I needed to. I don't know. But I do feel like in our house, like relationship is just normalized. You know, they've been raised to yeah. sit down at family meetings, to have one-on-one time, to co-create agreements, super collaborative. I want to hear your voice. Now she got into 14, 15, 16 and absolutely pushed hardcore sure. against that. And it still remained the container. It gave me an anchor once I got over like, nope, I'm leaning in. this is what I'm going to do. Because the alternative is, what am I going to drag her?
Punish her through this?
Yeah. That is not right. going to be useful at all. Right. And I would have lost. I mean, I don't even know what would have happened to her. You know, I mean, I actually would only text with my dad and my stepmom, who I adore, who raised me through my teen years, best, you know, doing the best they could with the tools they had and the mindset that yeah. they had. But I could not listen to somebody tell me that I was absolutely doing the wrong thing, letting, and I'm air quoting, letting her drop out of school.
Yeah.
As if, right?
Right, and so we
just went to text. I said, I love you guys. And I'm not going to get on the phone with you. I'm already in enough self-doubt. And I'm trusting that Rowan's self-preservation right now is off the charts. And I'm going to let her take the lead on this. And I'm going to stand by her and walk beside her. You know, was it the right thing? It doesn't really matter because we're 4 years later and
she's
doing really great. And would it have been the right thing for all kids? I don't know. I wouldn't claim to say just let them let. There's that word again.
Yeah, there it is.
And I have a lot of clients who have kids that, you know, are gripped in mental health and they're in it, right? It's less about how do I get my kid up and out? And it's more about how can I be with right now? Because right now is really hard. And like you said, not fun.
Yeah. It's not
what
fun.
I signed up for.
And that's what I feel like I really needed in my teen years, right? Like my mom used to say to my dad would start the day and be like, can I talk to her today? Like, what am I allowed to do? And they, you know, there was trauma involved that they were just very unaware of. And also they never asked a question, right? Mm-hmm. It was just, can I talk to her today? And I was a brat and I was whatever. And what I really needed was for somebody to just be in the hard with me. No one could fix it. No one could take it away.
Yeah.
But to just be in it with me. Yeah. And I think that that's, I don't know, the hardest part of parenting. But what you hit on, like the relationship piece there. And I think when we're doing this work with younger kids, so often it is like, I just presented to a group of teachers yesterday. And there was a teacher there who's a mom of four. And she was like, well, what happens when you've like tried all the things and it's not working? And I said, well, what's not working? And it was really still with this like goal to get the kid to do what she wanted them to do. Right. And I was like, for me, the goal isn't a certain outcome and behavior. The goal is a relationship. And mm-hmm. it's this just ability to connect with each other and disconnect and reconnect and know that overall, my goal is truly just to be in relationship with these humans. And I was chatting with Hunter about this and Hunter Clarkfield, she had said like, you know, her kids are older now too. And I was like, what would you do differently? Or like, what have you learned that you can like hit a sister with while I'm in it with her young? And it came back to the same thing where she was just like, just continue to be in relationship and know that there will be times of disconnection. There will be times where, yeah, you're not jiving. You're not having fun. They're not having fun. And we're still in relationship with each other and we're going to keep ebbing and flowing and that the relationship evolves and changes. Kind of like a partnership or a marriage where who you were at 23 when I got together with Zach and then when we got married, like that version of us is a different version of us than it is today, you know? And like the ebb and flow of just being in relationship, not the goal of a certain behavioral outcome.
Feel like you're the martyr in your family? You're not alone. Hey, this is Joanne.
And Bree.
And we're from the No Guilt Mom podcast. Bree, we talk to a lot of moms.
Yeah, we sure do.
And if you're a mom who has a to-do list that is so massive that you get overwhelmed and you shut down,
or if you fall into the habit of doing everything for everyone and don't know how to change it, we can help you become a no-guilt mom.
We're going to take you from family martyr to family model. That's role model. So that you role model the behavior that you want to see out of your kids.
You're going to go from being tired and overwhelmed to energized and guilt-free.
Every week, you'll get actionable strategies that you can implement right away from the experts that we interview and from us.
We also have a whole lot of fun. So check out the No-Guilt Mom podcast everywhere you listen to your favorite shows.
No one told us the truth about parenthood. Why? This is the podcast everyone needed before they had kids because now that those little ones are here, whew, there is a lot to unpack. I'm Rachel Shepard-Ota, and I am your host for the podcast No One Told Us, where we tell the truth about parenting and let you in on all the stuff you really should have known about before having kids. I am the founder of Hey Sleepy Baby, but this podcast is so much more than sleep. We'll be diving into all the topics that you really care about and need to know while you do your best job raising those adorable, tidy humans. Our goal is to just make you feel less alone and less overwhelmed. There are so many things that no one tells us before becoming a parent, and I think that we should really pull back the curtain on becoming a first-time or second-time mom or dad to share the good, the bad, and the ugly. We'll have a little education, a little fun, and a whole lot of heart that goes into each and every episode. So join me and our amazing guests each week to hear us talk about what no one told us.
Yes. Oh my gosh. This is why we love each other, everyone. 100%. I literally just filmed a little reel about this exact same thing because, you know, I've seen people in my Facebook group and in my membership, and they're like, I feel like I can't, you know, I can't be firm or have expectations because I'm going to wreck the relationship. Like, it feels very either or, I think, for people, because, you know, most of us were raised with you're either kind or you're firm.
Yeah.
And I think you and I, maybe different language, but both subscribe to, and positive discipline, we call it kind and firm. Mm-hmm. Right. And when our kids are disappointed or mad at us, or when we have to say, like, oopsie, like, so sorry, I gave you that phone and we didn't talk about limits, and now we're going to have to pull back a little bit. You know, we're going to collaborate. We're going to figure this out. And our kids are like, no, we don't want, you know, you're not ruining your relationship. Yeah. Like, the relationship. And I think too, when we're so hyper focused on how do I get them to do this or to not do that, it's the wrong question. The question instead can be, what is going on in my relationship with my kiddo that is leading them this way or that way? Yeah. What is being called for relationally? What is it that my kiddo needs right now as they navigate this thing or that thing? Right? Because 100%. There's no formula for, like, how do I make sure they never do
sure
X, Y, Z, right?
I also think we can sometimes think, like, if I do X, Y, and Z correctly on my end, then they're going to respond to me in a very specific way. They're going to be kind. They're going to use their manners. They're going to be like, sure, mom, here's my phone. You know what? Let's have that collaborative talk about those limits, yeah. Right? Like, that's probably not going to be how they respond to you, no matter how, like, kind of quote, perfectly you do your part. And I think that can come up too, of like, well, I tried this with the kid and then they were rude, or they said this snappy thing back to me or whatever. It's like, yeah, sure. They're going to have a reaction to their feelings and to our boundaries. And that's okay. Like, that's part of navigating relationship with one another. It happens with my husband, right? Like, it happens in partnership with us. And I love that, like, reminder of, like, you can be firm and kind.
Yeah.
That when I just said to Zach the other day, he was navigating something with Sage, and I said, at some point you have to be the adult here. And it was that reminder of, like, you have to be firm here too.
Yeah.
That it can't just be the negotiation, and not everything is. Sometimes we're going to move through this. And then when you are firm, it's not like, okay, well, here we go. I'm going to scoop you up and we're not going to talk. Like, there's also a way to navigate the firmness, right? Mm-hmm. And it's finding that. And I think you're right. It's so hard because I think so many of us were raised in just the firm and, like, an obedience culture.
Yeah.
And so then when a kid's defiant, which we're going to see a lot of in teen years as a nervous system reaction to dysregulation, it's really, for us, going to trigger this, like, well, they're not being obedient from our childhood. And then they're also not being collaborative, this other thing I think they're now supposed to be.
Right.
In relationship.
I love how sciencey you are. I love talking to you because you're always like, and yeah, at Yale, they found blah, 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 and their nervous system, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, all emotion. I'm like, listen. Okay. And another thing that comes up though too, is people say, but I'm in good relationship with my kid and they're still doing the things.
Yeah.
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 But the good news about doing the things and getting into mischief and making mistakes and falling down while being in a solid mm-hmm. relationship with a healthy adult is you get to help them learn from the experiences that they're having, and they feel supported and loved, and the likelihood that they will move through less scathed, I won't say unscathed, but less yeah. scathed is so high versus the parent whose kids are getting into the same mischief, won't talk to them. How can I can't even have a relationship? Like, there's no influencing behavior without relationship. And correct. So parents get kind of agitated at me sometimes when I bring them back. I see you talking about all these things and you get to work on relationship. But yeah. what about, yep, you got to work on relationship. Like, this is the back door to influencing yeah. what's happening out there is relationship.
It's also really easy to look on the outside and be like, especially if your kid, they're getting into the mischief or they're in, if they're, again, with some nerdiness, their nervous system reaction, we know we're going to have one of four choices. We're going to have that fight mode. We're going to flee. We're going to fawn, people please, or we're going to freeze. Mm-hmm. And I'm really good at fleeing, and it really on the surface for people looked like I was a successful, independent young adult. I studied abroad in Austria when I was 15, all by myself for 6 months. And they were like, wow. And I was like, oh, red, running away, right? Like yeah. I was running away. But being able to really discern, I think when we look on the outside, we see that fight mode, we see it in young kids, or we see people pleasing, which is usually our kids that are easy. And we're like, we were just having this conversation with teachers where I was like, please notice these kids, the kids in your classroom who are easy, who they are only raising their hand when they have the right answer, that they're afraid of disappointing you, of making a mistake, of failing, that internally is often anxiety in the works. Mm-hmm. That down the road, that's how that shows up. Is oh, this yeah. like, oh my
that
gosh,
was something it's been I festering. Missed. Yeah, sure. That was something that I missed because Rowan, I mean, teachers would literally cry. Her third grade teacher, Mrs. Erickson, cried at the parent-teacher conference because of how much she loved Rowan and this yeah. wild class that she had. And there was this pillar of calm and serenity, which was yeah. Rowan, who, you know, who was the same kid who sure. had these funky tics at the start of the school year that we were like, what is happening? Right. And then they went away. I mean, yeah, yeah that bonding, that people-pleasing thing, I noticed too with my son and, you know, I have not been an expert at kind and firm.
Sure.
I definitely am on the pendulum swing. I have my moments where I'm yep. there and
where I'm just firm, where I'm just kind, but not always kind right. and firm.
Like I'm like a complete psychopath until I can't stand myself. And then I'm like overly, you know, like accommodating until I can't stand the kids. It's that like, and I've had to be really explicit, especially with my son. You know, because he was very reactive when I was upset with him. And I mean reactive in like it killed him if I was mad mm-hmm. at him. And that was heartbreaking, right? And I could see he's 17, 6'5", 200 pounds. I don't see it so much anymore. But I can see that we do have a little bit of this connection that is a little people-pleasy. Sure. Right. And so I'm aware of it. I'm noticing it and, you know, just working to remind myself and to remind him like, it's okay. You know, this is the consequence is I'm frustrated by what you're doing. It's killing me that you have it. Like the stack of dishes in a teenager's room is real. Okay. Ask any parent of a teenager that you know to send them a picture of the stack of dishes in their kid's room and they will send it. And it is exasperating. It's like, come on. I know that sounds like
no, worse it's real. It's
so
real.
Annoying. And, you know, and I'm like, and he's like, okay, sorry. And I have to say like, no, it's okay. You don't need to grovel. Like, just put the dishes away, you know? So anyway, I don't know. That kind of took me into a little tangent there, but I think it's equally, it can be equally as damaging, yeah. right? That dynamic for sure, especially for our girls,
mm-hmm.
right?
Especially for our girls. And I think like, but on the outside, when you're like, oh, my kid's still getting into the mischief. We're seeing these again, it's still that external behavior. Mm-hmm. And well, we can often be looking for is this like, they're not doing that. They are able to just like go to the party and not drink and they're going to be the DD, or they're not going to go to the party, or they're going to whatever. Like, why can't they do it like this person? And right. I married the kid who didn't drink at the party. And when I met him, he was riddled with anxiety, which is why he wasn't drinking at the party. And he was so afraid of disappointing his parents or making a mistake or whatever, that it wasn't from a place of health. Yeah. It wasn't from a like, oh yeah, I don't want to. I want to have a good time and hang out.
I have a really good connection to myself. And I
exactly like that wasn't it. But I think on the outside, when we're only looking at those behavioral outcomes, then it can be like, yeah, my kid's a teen and I have this relationship and they're still doing these things. And that's why you and I both were like, yeah, because that is, it's for me sometimes scarier when they're not.
Yeah.
When they're not pushing boundaries, when they're not looking for that novelty. And I get curious about why. Who are they afraid of disappointing and how does that show up down the road?
Yeah. Yeah. I would add to, you know, the really messed up part of the whole thing is, you know, there are the kids that get into mischief whose life unfolds in a really scary direction.
100%.
And there are kids who do feel really confident in the, no thanks, I'm going to be the DD. I'm going to show up for my friends, like who aren't riddled with anxiety. Like all those outliers absolutely exist. And I don't know about you, but when I work with parents, you know, I can feel that slipperiness, right? I can feel that, like, and I have to listen to my own gut and I have to remind parents to listen to their gut, right? Like things happen and you do need outside support with us. You know, we thought there was an eating disorder happening and told Rowan that she was going in, you know, there was a bed for her and it was the most gnarly 24 hours of my life. And she was just like a caged animal. You can't do this. You'll ruin the family. And I just had to talk about like, I'm ruining relationship, right? Mm-hmm. All I kept saying like a broken record was, this is bigger than our family. This is bigger than our family. We have to get you help. This is bigger than our family. Turns out there was no bed for her, which I think was the universe stepping in a really messed up way. Because she knew after that, like, we aren't going to not do whatever it takes.
Sure.
Anyway, yeah, we've turned.
I think it's
completely
so
turned that corner, but
it's so true. And I think that's where like we can, that's where our fear, anxiety can come in. And one of my like best friends growing up, she and I both experienced trauma around the same age, and we went on two different paths with it. I definitely had a lot, like it was touch and go for a long time. A lot of coping, a lot of substance use. But looking at her, like her life has been so much harder than mine. Like I ended up in therapy and having access to tools, also just like didn't have the addiction tendencies that she had. Right. Yeah. And like that was just luck of the freaking draw.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's the part that I think is so scary. And now looking even like who knows what it'll be like with by the time Sage is there, but the like, what is in a drug, right? Like when
drugs have been ruined.
Right. Exactly. I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, no, I recognize like for you and your teenage brain, this feels like not a big deal and whatever. And actually like it is. And like that fear for me definitely surfaces a bit. And I think it is finding that balance of like, how do we let them make mistakes and stretch those wings and come back and process while not losing them.
Yeah, totally. And remembering too, and this is what I would say to myself often with Rowan specifically, both my kids, but her specifically, is they're on their journey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and go out into the world and take in the humans around you, and every single one of them has their story that brought them to exactly where they are in this moment. And that was, for me, it was a lot of trusting, like, this is a thread in the tapestry of her life.
Yeah.
Right. And
so scary to trust.
Oh God, it's torture. And I'm so glad that I did. And it's, you know, she's like, you owe your career to me, Mom.
You're welcome, Mom.
I feel like I should be paying her every time I talk about her, but it is true. And I would tell her, like, this experience is making me a better parent coach. It's making me more useful to people because you know, just like your experience, mm-hmm. right? And the pain you went through.
Mm-hmm.
You get to be compassionate in such a deeply authentic way. And yeah. I'm grateful for that.
Yeah, I wouldn't change my experience. I would love to tweak, like having an adult there to turn to.
Oh, yeah.
And that for me, when
one night stands
now,
that I wish I could go back.
But that when I look at it now, like that's a relief for me as a parent is like, oh, it's not my job to make sure he doesn't experience trauma. Like I know trauma is something you can get through.
Yeah.
It's my job to make sure that he knows I'm there throughout the process. And that he can turn to me. He's not going to be in trouble for it. And we'll figure it out together and we'll move through it together. That's my job. And that is the part from my experience that I feel so grateful. Like that when I look back, yeah, it wouldn't change my trauma. It was a part of my journey and it's very much led to like me doing this work, who I am, et cetera. And it would have been really jazzy to have an adult to turn to. Yeah. And like that's, but I'm like, oh, that's something I can control.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I can be the adult.
Oh my gosh. Alyssa, this is such an amazing conversation. Thank you so much for this. And
thank
listeners,
you.
Like, I hope that you're taking away. It's freaking messy. It's just so messy.
Ugh.
And here you go. No answers.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Good luck.
Oh,
call us
there?
When you need us. We'll remind
call
you.
Call us when
messy.
You would like to have no more answers and you just want to know that it is messy because boy, do we have that for you. Where can folks find you, connect with you, learn more about you, all that jazz?
Yeah, well, you mentioned I also host a podcast. It's called Joyful Courage. It's wherever you found this one, you'll find Joyful Courage, or you can head over to besproutable.com/teens. So I'm the adolescent lead at Sproutable. And that's where you can find me. I teach classes. I do a 6-week class for parents of teens. I don't let parents who are not parents of teens into this class. Every once in a while, I have someone who's like, I just want to get ready. I'm like, no. You don't get to come till you're in it. It's a 6-week class based in positive discipline, super supportive. I have a membership program. So all of that is on besproutable.com/teens. You can follow me on Instagram at joyful_courage. And I have a Facebook group, again, for parents of teens. The people who are not parents of teens in my guidelines, I'm like, if you are not a parent of a teen, you get to quietly observe. Nobody wants to hear from you unless you've already shown up inside of this dynamic. It's spoken a little kinder than that, but it's called Joyful Courage for Parents of Teens. And it's a really supportive, authentic, transparent, kind group. I mean, there's like 2,000 people in that group, and I'm amazed that it hasn't gone, you know, some corners of the internet get a little ugly, but so far it's really, really positive, encouraging, powerful. So that's
awesome.
Where you can find me. Yeah.
Thank you. Thanks for hanging out with me.
Ugh, thank you. This has been a joy.
Thanks for tuning in to Voices of Your Village. Check out the transcript at voicesofyourvillage.com. Did you know that we have a special community over on Instagram hanging out every day with more free content? Come join us at seed.and.sow. Take a screenshot of you tuning in, share it on the gram, and tag seed.and.sow to let me know your key takeaway. If you're digging this podcast, make sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. We love collaborating with you to raise emotionally intelligent humans.
Oh, hey, everybody.
It's us, Blair and Molly, your old pals from Toddler Purgatory. Two moms who are also actors, who are also creative beings, who sometimes feel stuck.
And this is our new podcast, Unsticking It with Blair and Molly. What happens when your creative spark just seems to disappear? Gone.
Poof. Bye.
See ya. What happens when life gets in the way of your creativity instead of nourishing it? That's what happened to Molly and me. We felt like the thing that drove us creatively stopped working and impending doom had in fact impended.
Totally. So we decided to do something about it. And that was steal ideas about getting unstuck from the most creative people we can find. We talk to guests about how to break through the mucky, gluey, sticky wall that can get between you and your creativity. We hear about their journeys, their successes, their challenges, and even their bougie coffee shop orders.
And we're not just talking Bob Ross type paint on paper artists here, though we talk to them too. We're talking to actors, creative directors, dancers, and people who are working hard to be their best creative selves in a world that can sometimes feel real uncreative.
We all have something to teach each other, so let's steal their ideas together.
Join us, won't you, as we deep dive into how to unstick ourselves from the life gunk that can get in the way of our creative freedom. Pandemics, school calendars,
world events, lack of sleep. Oh, get out of there, life gunk.
And let's get back to your best creative self. Subscribe to Unsticking It with Blair and Molly.
You're not going to want to miss an episode.
Unsticking It with Blair and Molly, because sometimes life sucks. Unsticking.